You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to follow the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. Part two of a great conversation I'm having with Alex Toledo of Right Five Reasons Sports. We've been going through the current additions to the Miami Heat roster, looking back at some of the players that we had last season, and then kind of just drawing our correlations and seeing whether or not Miami has actually improved this season. First and foremost, Alex, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing all right, man. How about you?
Hanging in there. You know how it is. Great to be able to talk to you for a second straight time. Seems like that first episode was pretty well received. And if for anybody who hasn't checked out that first episode, absolutely go and do so. But just a reminder to people, basically what we're doing is we're looking at six different players, 3 and 3. We looked at six yesterday's episode, and then we're breaking them down into five different categories: offense, defense, intangibles, basketball IQ, and then health and age, and then coming up with an average score and trying to use that to figure out whether or not Miami has actually improved. One of the questions that I get asked a lot is whether or not this team is actually a better version than they were last year. I think most people would agree that they are. We're just trying to quantify it to some degree, looking at the players that they've added. So we'll start off today's show by looking at a couple of players that really haven't had much of an opportunity to make any kind of impact. On one side of the equation, there is a player that was drafted in the lottery last year, not just outside of the lottery, was a fine player, seemed like he had some upside and never really quite panned out in his one season in Miami. He's now a member of Toronto Raptors. That's Precious Achiuwa. Alex, you'll be handling that. What do you think about Precious and his departure from Miami? Are you disappointed? Obviously it nets you Kyle Lowry, but I think overall, it doesn't seem like Heat fans are all that concerned about the loss of Precious.
I was a fan of Precious coming in. He wasn't somebody that I was expecting the Heat to draft or anything like that. I'm definitely not a college basketball guy. But after I picked up on some of the stuff he was good at, I was kind of in on him just because he seemed like a freak athlete who could do some things as far as being a mobile big man. He was obviously not ready to be an impact player on like a winning team. And I think that's ultimately what made it so much easier for the Heat to kind of move on from him. I think the Raptors reportedly have liked him for a while now. I think it's a good situation for him. They've been looking for bigs, so it's going to be him versus, I think, Ken Birch, you know, in that big man rotation. So I'm rooting for him, but the Goran thing was what hurt me more, you know, what I had to process a little bit, right? Like, I was excited for Lowry, the fact that they didn't fumble it, but losing Goran hurt a little bit more than losing Precious, even if, you know, that he'd have so few young guys on the team.
Right. No, I agree with you. It's funny to see how different organizations value that process of development. Like, Miami fans are like, bring in Paul Millsap or Wes Matthews, guys that are probably more towards the tail end of their careers, versus a Toronto fan base that says, no, we stole the draft. We stole that trade. You know, it was a fleecing of Pat Riley because we got a 21-year-old and Precious Achiuwa. And it's just interesting how that disparity works that way. I think Precious has potential, but potential is that great mystery box. And there's so many different factors into actually having that potential realized. And it might never pan out. It could pan out in 5 years. It could pan out in 2 years. It has to be about fit, about coaching, about opportunity. All these things really play into a young player's just timeline in terms of whether or not they're actually able even to develop. And so I'm not all that concerned about it. I wish him the best of luck, but who knows what happens down the road. In any case, let's start off with Precious and his offensive rating on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being not that great, 5 being, or 4 being closer to about an average level NBA player, and 10 being superstar LeBron, Giannis, et cetera. Where do you rank Precious Achiuwa's offense?
I think 4.5 is fair for him. Like, wow. He is somebody. Well, that's high.
4.5 for the guy who gives Joel Anthony a run for the money and worst hands in Heat history.
Whoa, Joel Anthony was a starter for some teams. Man. Yeah. Precious couldn't even stay as a backup 5. Let's not.
I know. Joel Anthony might be a better offensive player than Precious Achiuwa. I'm a little surprised.
I think it's just me continuing to misunderstand the numbers and the, like, you. So you said 4 is an average player.
Right. Precious is not an average player.
Rather than 4.5. I mean, you don't think 4 is I mean, average as far as like he can be out there on the court on offense just as a lob threat. Like if you put a good point, you know, some good playmakers next to him,
okay,
he can be out there as a lob threat. But he's just not somebody who's great at catching or finishing. Like the screen setting is up and down. But I just think that's the type of stuff that he'll learn sooner than later. So maybe I'm being a little bit generous there, but I'm just looking at him like, yeah, he just gets the easy dump off passes and stuff like that as he grows.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, look, I think his lack of passing, playmaking, he can bring the ball up, right? I mean, five BAMs and everything. I understand that a lot of people don't know about that. Yeah, well, I mean, he's got potential there. We haven't seen a lot of it actually on the court. But anyway, on defense, I think he should probably rank a little bit higher. Where do you rank him defensively?
I think five. I think he looked a little bit better in the first half of the season than the second half, but he showed that. I think that's the end of the floor that where he'll be better sooner rather than later, rather than offense, yeah. Right? I think the offense stuff is more like, oh, he has an easier role. And one thing I do want to say as far as the defense stuff here with Precious is like he was asked to do a whole lot this year as a rookie. And, you know, I think he's going to figure this stuff out as he goes on. But really, the Heat were out there switching, dropping, not dropping a whole lot this past season, but they were zoning, they were trapping. And, you know, they do this – they have a lot of weird, like, overhelping that they did last season. I just think there was a lot for him to process, and they were constantly changing it. You know, I'm not trying to make excuses for him. I'm just saying it's a lot. It's not your average center who's just dropping the whole game on every screen, right? And I think Precious is somebody who, because of his build, you know, we talked about acreage. I think he has that whiff to his frame and that raw athleticism where it's like, he'll be able to put it together on defense. He wasn't a consistent enough rebounder yet. I just think that part, you know, with his mobility, with the strength that I think he will have, I think he'll be pretty good there sooner rather than later.
All right. Intangibles, where would you rank him?
Oh boy. 3.5.
Yeah. I'm going to dock him that half a point. I think their mentality is there, but I just don't see him actually playing the way he talks. Like, that's not to say that he's got a bigger bark than bite or anything like that, but I can't remember now what was the quote that everybody loved when he was first drafted and they saw it on his Instagram profile or something like
Something about violence.
Yeah something like that. It was just like, all right, this guy's a dog,
only the violent will survive or something.
Yeah,
like that,
something like that. Yeah, and everybody's thinking, okay, this guy's perfect, Heat culture all the way, 100%. And then he comes here, and I'll never forget, there was one game, I want to say midway through the season, where Jimmy kind of just like berates him like a redheaded stepchild out on the floor. And I know that's Jimmy, and that's just part of what he does, and you have to learn to adjust one way or the other. But it never seemed like Precious was able to recover. And some guys can handle it, some guys can't. I mean, like you hear Duncan Robinson on his podcast talk about it, and Jimmy is a consummate leader, right? But he does get in your face. He does hold you accountable. And maybe for a guy like Precious, he wasn't just quite ready yet. It's ironically, I feel like everything I've heard about what Kyle does on the floor would seem perfect for a guy like Precious, because he's much more of a guiding hand. Yes, he's direct.
Yeah.
Yes, he holds you accountable, but he also takes that, you know, almost like a joy in mentoring you and getting you to develop fully. A player like OG Anunoby maybe wouldn't have thrived with Jimmy's harsh, you know, way of approaching things. But anyway, that's Precious. I'm going to give him a 3 on that. Basketball IQ, that's another one. That's a tough one too.
Basketball IQ for Precious, it's hard to give him anything higher than 3.5. Again, wow. I could go lower. I feel like some people will go lower with that. I'm going to give him just a slight benefit of the doubt just for, you know, again, the stuff he was asked to do. He could have been better, right? It wasn't great. I just think it wasn't a complete, I don't know. Like I think he was more up and down than anything. And I kind of expected out of rookies. So I'm just trying not to, you know,
you got a healthy curve there, professor. Yeah. Professor, you got a nice curve in your class. You're one of those guys.
What can I say?
Yeah. Yeah. That rating on teachersratings.com or whatever, you know, it's going to be favorable. It's like, oh, Dr. Toledo always gives us a 20-point curve on our tests here. You know, I came in late one day and he's like, he gave me the A anyway. Age, health, how's that work out for you? Because, I mean, obviously he's young. I mean, durable enough, at least from what we've seen. I'm sure that's a great potential there. Yeah, it's got to be pretty high. So
I don't know 5. Exactly how high to put it. So I guess
that's about right. I mean, you can even give him a 9. So that actually puts him at a pretty high scale there. 4, 5, 3, 3.5, 8.5. That gives him an average of 4.8. That's an above average player, just because I guess if you take into consideration his potential, the health and age in particular, and the fact that you can build on some of those things that we saw, he does seem on the surface as a pretty decent player. This year will probably go a lot more towards telling exactly what kind of impact he has. We'll see if Toronto's able to develop him to any kind of level whatsoever. But
all
that kind of
do is like not fumble easy passes and easy layups and stuff like that. And he's going to look so much better, I feel.
Sure. We'll see if Fred VanVleet can get him to another level that Goran Dragic couldn't. Anyway, moving on to Omer Yurtseven, wow. the superstar of Miami's offseason. That's going to be an interesting project there. I like that Miami brought him aboard. Of course, we're looking at a very small sample size of 2 summer league games in Sacramento and his college career. Not much really to go on. So I can't be critical of your curve because I'm totally applying one here. I don't know what to do here. So I am open to any and all suggestions from you, our listeners, or anybody else, because I am really drawing at straws here. On offense, the fact that he's a 7-footer that can stretch the floor, has some decent footwork in the paint, at least from what I've seen, has some nice touch around the basket. And again, it's just a legitimate 7-footer with an NBA-ready body. I gave him a 6 on offense. I think it's the combination of those skills that makes him an interesting prospect. So maybe that's a little low, maybe it's a little high, kind of right above average, I'd say, based on the fact that he is a 7-footer with legitimate range. I think that's fair. Defensively, I haven't seen anything from him other than he's just a 7-footer. So could he be exploited, you know, in summer league? Probably. Will he be exploited at the NBA level once he gets into the regular season? Yes. I don't see him getting a lot of playing time yet, because although he is a 7-footer and he probably can be a decent rim protector, I don't think he has a lateral mobility just yet to be able to contend on the perimeter, which means he's going to get smoked in pick and roll. He's going to get targeted pretty regularly. So I'm a little concerned about that. I have him as a 3 on defense. And here's where it gets really dicey. I mean, intangibles. He's a rookie. You know, he's not going to have a loud voice in that locker room. I could see Kyle maybe, you know, being a mentoring hand there and trying to guide him along. At the same time, I just don't think the expectations in that Heat locker room are different than they are elsewhere. Vets control the narrative there. They really dictate a lot of what's going on. Rookies kind of have to earn their keep. I'm not talking about just like fetching donuts or, you know, getting Popeyes for everybody or anything like that. It's about, you know, just trying to learn your place in the hierarchy there. So I just don't see that he's going to have much of an impact. I gave him also a 3 in terms of basketball IQ. Maybe I'm being a little low here, but I just haven't seen enough. I gave him a 3, but he seems like he understands the game, but he's also a rookie. And the fact that he was able to take advantage of other rookies in summer league doesn't necessarily speak volumes as to whether or not he'll be an impactful player at the NBA level. And then similarly to what we were talking about with Precious, I gave him an 8 in age and health. 7-footers tend to not be as durable as guys that are slightly shorter in Precious's case. So I was a little concerned about whether or not he's already got blisters on his feet. These things will happen. We've seen bigs throughout all of NBA history.
Blisters count here with health?
What's that?
Do blisters count?
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. I think so. Hey, man, didn't a blister sideline Josh McRoberts for like a year?
No, it could sideline you, but does it count as an injury?
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't it sideline Josh McRoberts for like a year?
No, I think that was just the Heat refusing to play him. No, I'm playing around.
No, maybe. Look, I know that.
Embarrassed that they signed him. Don't even go out there.
I always say Josh McRoberts could have been a real factor on this team. I don't know why.
That's why I'm so mad about it, because I was an idiot out there defending him over and over. Like, look at those nifty passes.
Damn right. Hey, you could create from the elbow. Shoot. Yeah. I mean,
but then it's like the defense knows he's never going to take the shot. And I think that's why that's part of that, of like why people get mad with Bam, when it's like, they know you're going to pass it, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, he was Bam before Bam. And I think we should all acknowledge, and he had glorious hair.
I feel like we just disrespected the hell out of Bam right now.
I'm sure he'll never come on the podcast after listening to that comparison. But overall, listen, this is going to be a real tough one for our listeners. Omer totals 23, which gives him an average of 4.6, which means a negative 0.2 differential between him and Precious. We actually lost out in the trade there to Toronto because of the loss of Precious Achiuwa. So that's not great.
I think the intangible stuff. So what was the difference there between the two of them?
It's just a 0.2 differential in total there.
Intangibles.
Oh, I gave him a 3 for both. Precious, you gave Precious a 3. I gave Omer a 3. You gave Precious Achiuwa a 3.5 in basketball IQ. I mean, that's slightly higher than what I gave.
I'll switch those two. Intangibles, 3.5, 3 in basketball IQ. And what I was going to say was for Omer Yurtseven, the only thing I will pick at there is I think he has a higher IQ than Precious.
All right. Well, I'll give him
I know it's only been 2 games. I just think, like, in those 2 games, he's shown you, like, basic reads that Precious was not consistent as making. And also part of that was Precious was not really a consistent center coming up, right, where I feel like the Heat boxed him in into the center position, you know, for obvious reasons, just to make his role a little bit easier. I don't think he has, you know, those types of swingman skills or even, like, small ball four skills as far as being able to handle. But still, Omer was out there as a big man knowing exactly when to pick and pop or when to actually roll, when to hit the passer. And in those 2 games, he just looked a lot more fluid and a lot more like, you know, he's been there before.
Well, that kind of evens things out then. Now with the change, the slight tweak in the Yurtseven numbers there, it's actually both of them average a 4.8, which means it's a wash yet again. We had that same situation happen in the Andre Markieff Morris comparison. Which is crazy
because one of them was a first-round pick.
Yeah, that kind of speaks to what Miami does well. So it kind of works out. Look, they're able to find these diamonds in the rough. They sign them to long-term contracts and they develop them and get them to that next level. So we'll see how it pans out. I mean, Yurtseven, I think more of a fool's gold at this point. It's kind of hard to exactly see how he'll play out, but there is potential. There is intelligence. The fact that they signed him at the end of last season means that he's been on their radar too. So he could turn into another Kendrick Nunn, somebody that we'll talk about in the next segment. I'm here with Alex Toledo, and you're listening to Locked On Heat. You ever go to one of those auto parts chain stores? You try to order the parts you're looking for. They ask you questions. You're not sure if you're giving the right answers. Just turns into this long mess. You're not really happy with it. And go through all that for what? When you've got computers at home and in your pocket, which means you've got access to rockauto.com, a family-owned business that's been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. You find the parts you're looking for, you choose from different manufacturers, you have a few easy clicks here on their navigate site that's so easy to just navigate through. It's just, you find everything you're looking for, you get it delivered directly and safely to your door. No fuss, no muss. It works out every time. Plus, you save money using rockauto.com. Again, a family-owned business. Their parts are available to everybody. Their prices are the same for everybody. So go to rockauto.com right now. Find all the parts that you need for your car or your truck. And then when you go to the section at the end that says, how did you hear about us? Just write the phrase locked on so they know we sent you. It's amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. That's rockauto.com. Back evaluating players from this year's roster, looking ahead to exactly quantifying somehow if Miami is in fact better after the acquisitions from this past offseason. It's been a fun exercise so far. Miami's current roster has a slight edge over last year's team, mostly because we rated Dwayne Dedman so much more highly than Nemanja Bjelica. So make sure to listen to yesterday's podcast. But we'll be talking about 2 players here that were both on the roster last year, but we can kind of fudge the numbers a little bit to look at Duncan Robinson as a player that we expect to take a leap this season. The contract, the fact that he's, you know, now entering into year 4 as an NBA player, he should be able to take a leap there. Well, maybe we'll start off with that conversation. Do you think Duncan can take a leap? I mean, he talks about it on his show pretty regularly. He does see that there's growth there. He's been working on some things in the offseason that he can continue to master. What do you think the next level is for Duncan, and do you think he has one to reach?
I don't know about taking a leap. I haven't really been thinking about that with Duncan. The idea to me, you know, that some people feel that he has to take a leap in order to be worth what they paid him is ridiculous. I think the guy that he was this past season, because I do think he grew in some areas of the game. Like, he just wasn't a complete defensive turnstile anymore where he's getting cheap fouls. I mean, look, the refs still call fouls on Duncan Robinson. That's going to be a thing for a while, apparently. But, you know, Duncan was really just doing a whole lot better of a job guarding guys on ISOs. And when he was caught on that island, like, just, I think he put himself away from that category of Tyler and Kendrick. So I just want to give him some respect there. You know, the stuff is when the handoff, you know, when they would defend the handoff and just kind of run him off the line, him being able to advance the ball just a little bit further in to kind of, you know, make the defense collapse to get it, you know, the pocket pass to Bam. Like, I think there's little stuff that he got better at. And that guy being the, you know, the best non-superstar shooter in the league, that's worth 5 years, 90. It's just, it is what it is.
Yeah.
So I as far as taking a leap, he can keep getting better at this stuff that we're talking about. He's already efficient when he does actually get to the rim. If he just keeps getting better, like, you know, just follow the Joe Harris path of, like, you know, when they run you off the line, just kind of help collapse the defense and keep the ball moving a little bit. You know, obviously keep being solid on defense. He's going to be the fifth, you know, like the worst defender in that starting lineup. And he has like a 6'10" wingspan.
Yeah.
So I don't think Duncan needs to take a leap. I wouldn't be surprised if he shows growth in some of the same areas where I just spoke about there, but I think he's good right now as is, like, for what this team needs, if I'm honest with you.
No, I agree. I mean, I've seen some people on Heat Twitter, which is never the best place for getting any kind of ideas, really. But, you know, by and large, I think he's rated pretty highly amongst Heat fans. But I think from casual observers, maybe they don't necessarily see his impact. They don't understand exactly what he does. It's easy to kind of be dismissive of this. I mean, even like older fans of the game, and they're still out there, they don't understand the impact of the 3-point shot. It's, you know, you see the old heads that are, you know, commentating on games, and they always talk about take it to the hole, take it to the rim. And while that's certainly a necessity in the game, the 3-point shot has its own incredible gravity to it. And Duncan certainly brings that. And I think that's what makes him such a unique player and such a necessary player. Like, he has to be on the floor because he makes things so much more easily for everybody. If we can quantify what Kyle is going to do in terms of the fact that he's going to make the game easier for Jimmy and Bam in particular, certainly Duncan does that as well. So I'm curious, where do you rank him on offense, given his limitations, but the strengths in specific areas?
Oh, so on offense, I think I'm going to have to give Duncan a nice 7.5.
That's fair. Like, I mean, I thought that's pretty good. Look, he is
7.5 or 8. I don't know which one of those two. I think I'm leaning 7.5 just because of, you know, the obvious lack of being able to do stuff off the dribble. But I just think, like, impact wise, he's a great offensive player.
I think an 8 is fair because I think it's also not his role. I don't think he's asked to do.
And he's
too
a good
much.
Cutter too, by the way.
Yes, absolutely. That's certainly a part of his offense. I think the capacity is there, the capability is there. I just don't think he's asked to. We've seen him put the ball down on occasion when everything else collapses, and he goes, "Okay, you're going to give me the lane, I'll take it." And because of that, you know, he's not exactly quick, but he can get to the rim, and he has that wingspan. He can finish at the rim at an incredibly high level. So, I mean, I'm okay with that rating. I think he is elite at what he does. I gave him an 8 there. I think it's fair because of, you know, the fact that what he does is so good. And, you know, sure, he's going to have off games. He's a shooter. It happens. But he still shoots 40% casually from behind a 3-point line. In today's game, that's such an incredible value. So an 8 might be even underselling at a point, but I think that's fair. So on defense, here's where the trickier part comes in. Where do you rate him defensively?
So defensively, it's a little bit tough. I think I'm gonna have to put him at about, I don't know, I think 5, maybe 5.5.
I would say lower on that one. Look, I'll let you explain it if you want to, but for me, the fact that he does get still called for those fouls, whether it's because he has a reputation, because he's white, because of whatever, like, he's gonna get those foul calls. You have to kind of take him down a point because of that. So I would say a 4.
I feel like that's why I would have him there at the 5, but I mean at 5 in itself, but I just think, like, he took a big step defensively last year from where he was before. I think he went from being terrible to just about decent. Average defensively. Like, I think he's better than on defense, and a lot of people give him credit for it. He's not a stopper by any means, but he's not, like, the average player isn't just going to get a bucket on him every single time. And he was doing a good job just holding him his own when really good players would do it. And obviously the Heat are they like to help on defense, but that's part of it. Like, right. He knows that, and he plays the context of what he's asked to do really well positionally. And that wingspan matters. I just don't think he's some turnstile for teams to, you know, kind of chew up every single possession the way that he was 2 seasons ago.
All right. 5. I mean, that's slightly above average, maybe, you know, I think it's still fair.
For some reason, I just keep thinking of 5 as average. But like,
oh, no, that's fine. That's fine. I mean, look, it's the parameters set to us by longtime listener Billy. He sent in the question and he gave us the kind of barometer that we've been using as far as four being average and six being above average, and then kind of working our way from there. But five is fine. Like, I mean, that's typically what you think of in an average from 1 to 10. So I think a five seems like a good rating for him. Intangibles.
The 6'9" wingspan is what gives me to the five.
That's fine. And it's fine. I agree with you 100%. Intangibles here. I mean, look, this is a guy who we know can handle things. He doesn't have that same voice in the locker room, although I think that's growing. What would you rate him in terms of intangibles?
I think this is another five. Like, I think he's a little bit above average there, you know, slightly above average, just because he knows where to be on the court. And I know all of this stuff is a little bit hard to separate sometimes from basketball IQ, yeah. But intangibles on the floor, like, he's not getting necessarily the rebounds or getting the stops, but he's doing his job always and just always moving around both ends of the floor, just trying to, you know, do his thing, man. And I gotta give credit to his effort and what he does out there. Like, I really do think he's just like always in the right position, more or less, right? And yeah. I think part of that is intangibles, even if he's not coming up with loose balls, right?
Yeah. I would separate, just for any kind of clarification, I would separate intangibles being more like that dog that you want in your corner and something like that. Like, you could give, like, you know, like, say Jimmy. His intangibles are probably a 10 just because he's a guy that you know, it will put up that fight, will find a way to come up with that big shot, et cetera, versus basketball IQ being more about the understanding of role and how to move on the floor and things of that sort. But I still think that he has a very high basketball IQ. I would say he's probably a 6 myself. What would you rate him at as far as basketball IQ?
Yeah, with IQ, I don't know. I think I'd go a little bit higher than that, probably 6.5 or
okay.
Maybe even 7. But I guess I'll stick with 6.5 for now. I just think, like, you know, like I spoke about before, he always knows where to be.
Yeah.
And whether it's his role or others, he understands positionally where guys are supposed to be on the court. And that seems like something that's, you know, every player should be able to know. But in the heat of a game, when things are moving around really fast in the NBA, guys are screening and running around all over the place. Everybody's huge and smart and can score from everywhere. Like, I just think that the growth that he's shown in these two seasons where he's really had a chance is phenomenal. Like, I think he kind of has the game. Like, even though, like, you just think of him as a one-dimensional player, as a shooter, the way that he comes off, obviously, he's not a rookie. He's a little bit older at this point, 26 to 27. He just comes off like a veteran player. And yep. I think that's the way that he plays, too. It's almost like if J.J. Redick was 6'9".
Good comp there. All right. Age and health. I mean, this is basically Miami's Iron Man. He's played all 72 games last season, all 82 the year before, or however many there were in the Orlando bubble. I think he's certainly durable, never really shown much injury. I mean, his age, I think, is probably the only factor that you could hold against him in these terms. Even as we're recording this, Udonis Haslem will return to the Miami Heat on a 1-year, $2.6 million deal for his 19th NBA season, being reported by Shams Charania of The Athletic. Thoughts on Udonis' return?
Never in doubt, man. Like, obviously, there's more context, more nuance to that. It's I get why people would say, you know, he's taken away from somebody else who could get a chance there who might not get a chance elsewhere. And basically the type of player that Haslem was once he came into the league, it's different, man. What he has going on with the Heat is different. I'm not surprised by it at this point. I love UD. I was there for that game and the whole thing with Dwight and the Sixers happened.
Yep.
Incredible moment. Because of that, I think I'm too biased to say otherwise that I would want him back.
No, that's – but yeah, that's fair. I mean, he's UD. Like, I hate – marketing myself, but I did have a chance to talk to him in May and I played that interview a couple days ago.
Great stuff, by the way.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. But you know, just to hear him talk about his role and the way he can still get into it with guys on the roster, I mean, I think like he's beloved there. Like, he calls his own shots. Effective suppose not playing him is one thing, but that's not to say he does not have value on the roster. Look, Miami just does things differently. You know, the 15th man on another roster might get some playing time or even get some minutes out there in terms of development. Maybe you're looking at a 21 or 22-year-old kind of on the fringes of the NBA. UD's not that. I mean, he's already certainly proven himself at the highest levels, but it's
tough, man. Like, yeah. They're going to have like, Depot's not going to be back until who knows when, probably the second half of the season. So you have one spot there. It's not going to be used up. You know, when people say like they're just going to have two or three spots, roster spots that aren't really going to be on the floor for a long time, I get that. I also get that this is one team. Just when you look at the guys that they picked up, the collective grit, and I've said that over and over, and because it's my new Spoism that I came up with. I'm going to try to see if I can get Spo to maybe, or maybe I'm just using an old Spoism and crediting myself there. But the collective grit of this team is one where it's like, okay, maybe you don't need UD. Like, look at all these guys here. Like, you may have that part. You might be able to, you know, UD could leave it in good hands with the stuff that he brings there. But it's also like, he's the cherry on top.
Yeah.
So it's hard to not want him back. I get the, for sure, like, it's going to suck now because I think part of it is, like, people want the Heat to sign more people, more players. And I understand that, too, because it's most likely going to be that they don't use that 15th roster spot. They're at 14 now with UD. Because if they do use that 15th, even on a veteran minimum player, they'll go over the luxury tax. So I just don't think Mickey is going to go into the tax for a Wesley Matthews or a Paul Millsap, who is not going to – and look, I hate move the needle talk, but they're definitely not moving any sort of needle. They're not even going to, like, really make your bench lineups that much better. They're not going to go into the luxury tax. So I understand people who get upset with the UD thing. I can't get upset with it.
Yeah. Look, I mean, Millsap kind of seems redundant if you do bring back Udonis here, although they're two very different players at this stage in their career.
But it was going to be on the floor, though.
Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, maybe. Who knows? I don't know. Look, and I think I've heard Spo refer to the collective grit of these teams before. But here's my theory.
I think I may have just stolen that.
It's all right. That's fair. We'll allow it here. I think that my theory, Udonis retires next season, Goran comes back, and he's the guy that stays on that roster as long as he wants for the next five seasons as the keeper of the culture in the Miami Heat locker room.
Let's just get it to a nice round 20 seasons. And just wouldn't that put him in the company of like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and
I saw somebody theorize that he wants to stick around for 22 just so he can beat Dirk Nowitzki one more time. And I'm all for it.
Oh my God, that would be fantastic.
That level of petty is just fantastic.
You need to get a UD statue out there before a Dirk statue. Or like UD, the UD statue is him checking Dirk.
Yeah.
In the 06 finals.
I wish they would have done something similar, like the way they the whole Mavericks front office went to Slovenia to sign Luka. Like everybody, Mickey, Pat Riley should have
that desperate.
No, I know, but they should have gone to Overtown somehow or Liberty City and get Udonis to sign, have him sign somewhere there. That would have been classic.
I like that. You see, because it's not a desperation mode. Like, please, we're going to fly all the way to Slovenia so that you could re-up on your rookie scale contract, which just about everybody does. Like, and who's like been there before?
Yeah, $207 million. No one's kissing that away.
Oh, I mean, like, please take this $200 million, Luka.
I'll consider it. Anyway, age, health for Duncan Robinson, that should be pretty high. What do you give him there?
I guess I'll go 7. The only reason I wouldn't, huh?
And age? I mean, the age factor, you think is that much of a factor? You got to give him a 9. He's the Iron Man. He played all every game that he's been available. I can't see how you can knock
him. 7.5. It's just because I feel like I gave Precious maybe a 7.5 or did it? Or what, did I give him an 8?
No, you gave him an 8.5.
Okay. 7.5 then for Duncan. Wow. He's a little bit older, but you think that's low?
I think that's low. I mean, I had him almost at 9.
Damn, you're really pressuring me. But
no, that's cool. No, it's cool. Hey, no, all right, 7.5 is fine. 7.5 is fine. Okay, they're your numbers. I could veto this one, but I don't necessarily agree with it.
You have veto power?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. It's my show. I can do whatever I want. And I could see the age being a consideration, you know, whether or not he kind of holds up over the course of this contract. We have not seen him get that kind of playing time. Maybe the style of play.
I'm actually not worried about that part. I think he's just going to be elite at what he does for the next several years, to be honest.
All right, then I'm vetoing. I'm going to give him an 8.5.
Fuck it. I'm good with it.
All right. All right, Kendrick Nunn now. This is
Give him 8, just because he's older than Precious. Let's compromise and do 8.
No, veto power 6, 8.5, wow. Sorry. Yeah, sorry, yeah. I have ultimate power here. All right, Kendrick Nunn, Like, for all the knocks on Kendrick and everything else, I think you cannot possibly dismiss the fact that he is a very solid offensive player. He had a phenomenal shooting season that everybody kind of seems willing to overlook. And while maybe there was a lot of inconsistency there in the first half of the season, and then more so in his previous year as a rookie, I think he certainly developed much more consistently as the year went on. I give him an 8 on offense. I think he's a guy who can get to the bucket, who had the mid-range game, who certainly had the three-point shot there. I hope he doesn't flourish the same degree for the Lakers, but you can't dismiss the fact that he is a great offensive player. So I think an 8 seems pretty fair there. On defense, however...
Oh, hold on. Can I nitpick on that a little bit?
Yes, absolutely.
What is an 8, like, if you had to categorize how good an 8 is compared to the rest of the league?
Oh, all right. Let's let a recent signing.
4 is average.
Yes, 4 is average. He's certainly above average.
That's
superstar
for sure.
Level. Superstar. The thing is that superstar level to me is somebody who has a total offensive package.
I agree. Kendrick Nunn is not a superstar.
Kendrick is not that playmaker yet. We've seen flashes from him, though. There were moments there where he was not just a willing, but very able passer and able to create plays and opportunities for others. And it just seems like he's just such a dog in terms of his ability to score. And
did you have him lower than Duncan on offense?
Similar, 8, both of them equal 8.
That's an interesting one right there.
All right. We'll see how it pans out.
I'm feeling a little weird about it because I know Kendrick can do more things on offense.
Yeah.
The score, but I'm also like,
he's not elite at anything. He's above, exactly. Okay, you know what? All right.
He's like a role. He's like a more of a complimentary player where I feel like Duncan was kind of like the focus of the Heat's offense. You know, maybe not the best thing, but.
You've made a strong case. I'm lowering it to 7.5.
Wow. I think this is the first time I've actually moved you on a score. One of these two shows where it's like you've moved me probably like 7 times.
Wow. All right. Yeah, it can be somewhat tyrannical. I'm behind the mic. I'm sorry. Defense. Look, he has spurts, but they're far too inconsistent for my liking. I'm even looking at the 4 that I've given him and wondering whether or not I might have made a mistake because he's below average. He's got to be a 3. Like, there's no way around it. There are just moments there where he has no idea what he's doing in terms of just being on the floor where he's supposed to be. And while there was growth in year 2, and you expect that there'll be more in years 3 and 4 with Los Angeles right now, especially because LeBron's not going to let him do anything other than play defense at a high level, I think the expectation, at least from what last season anyway, it was that he was certainly well below average. So a 3 seems fair. In terms of intangibles, like more along the lines of what we were saying before, like he is just the dog. He's a guy who, you know, was always very, very steady, almost to the point where you couldn't read anything as far as his reaction was concerned. I think everybody loves his story. I've mentioned it before, but it was I was working on a piece on Bam Adebayo in Kendrick's rookie year, and I talked to Alvin Gentry, and I was asking him about Bam, and he's like, Bam, wow, the guy I want to talk about is Kendrick. And it's just his story, and I know we could get into the details. I don't really want to because I've rehashed it enough on this show. But his story and about the fact that he was able to kind of just burst onto the scene and be the kind of player that he was and get that opportunity in Miami, it's one that certainly gravitates around the NBA. So I gave him a 6 in terms of intangibles. In basketball IQ, however, what I said before defensively and even offensively and his lack of playmaking, I think that kind of takes away from it. I'd say it kind of balances out a little bit. He's average. Like, he understands his role. He just doesn't always do it. Defensively, he does not always understand his role, but I think he's still a pretty – you know, he's an okay player to have out there. He's not going to be quite the turnstile. He's not as bad as Tyler, I'd say. Who is the worst defender on the Heat roster last year? Was it Kendrick or Tyler?
That is really hard. I think Goran was in the mix there as well.
Yeah.
I think Goran was just a little bit better as a one-on-one guy. And I kind of think Tyler was too, man. I think, well, actually, this is really hard. I don't have an answer for this. Like, Kendrick, I feel like, would die on screens the most.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So if we just got to get specific, I think that was his worst thing. Tyler's worst thing. I think it's actually one-on-one defense. I think I said earlier that I would take Tyler's one-on-one defense over Kendrick, but now I'm not sure. I just think we're arguing over which one of these guys were worse defenders, and I'm having a really tough time. Like, I can't come up with an answer. Well, you would think Tyler's the worst?
I think so. I don't know. Maybe there's just something to
more than fair.
Yeah, there's just something more to Kendrick's physicality that I think is a factor there. But I mean, I might be wrong. He's like, he's a little bit harder to move, you know, in terms of his defensive stance, but he can absolutely get screened out of a play. We've seen that too many, many times for my liking. Good luck dealing with that in Los Angeles. Anyway, I gave him a 4 in terms of basketball IQ and an age and health. Aside from his COVID issue and the injury that he incurred midway through his rookie season, I think he's been so much, you know, a very steady presence out there. His age certainly makes him interesting as a prospect and things of that sort. I think there's plenty of time left for him to develop into a pretty average NBA player. So I gave him an eight overall in terms of age and health, which puts him at, you know, a pretty high ranking. He actually averages a total of 28.5, which makes him a 5.7 in terms of, you know, his average there, just below Duncan Robinson averages 6.6 there. So not bad for him. That makes Kendrick and Duncan both above average players. I think that's fair in terms of their offensive abilities and everything else like that. But that gives this year's roster a slight advantage there, the differential being a 0.9 overall. So still a narrow victory for this year's roster, something I think will probably be defined much more completely in the next segment where we talk about the point guard battle between Goran Dragic and Kyle Lowry. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Just a reminder, as always, Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season in full swing. You can track all of it over at BetOnline. Get the latest news, odds, and info for your sporting needs. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline, your laptop or mobile device, and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON. Betting on the NBA doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling, get daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favorite picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day. Follow the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag wherever you get podcasts. I'm here with Alex Salido, and we're talking about last year's roster versus this year's roster. It's been a fun exercise, two great episodes. I've really enjoyed this conversation. But now it's on to the big boys here. These are the big guns, Kyle Lowry versus Goran Dragic. I gave you the privilege of being able to evaluate Kyle Lowry. That's a tough one since we haven't seen his level of play here up close. But from everything we've seen in Toronto, I think he should probably make a huge difference in Miami's roster this year. Let's start off with his overall offense. Where do you rank Kyle's?
I think I'm going to go. So what was it for Duncan that I had there?
For Duncan Robinson, you gave him an 8 because he's an elite shooter. And I think that's fair.
Okay. I guess I'm going to have to go 9 for Kyle then. Is that crazy?
I don't think it is.
I was thinking 8.5, but I feel like I should have Kyle a little bit, a whole point higher than Duncan. So that's just making me think 9 now.
No, because I don't know that you can really pinpoint anything that Kyle does at a quote unquote elite level, which is what, you know, which I think sways everything in Duncan's favor. He's an excellent playmaker, great shot maker, gets to the rim. He can hit the shot from the perimeter. He does everything really, really well. Set screens on bigs. I mean, these things matter. So I think 8.5 is fine. He's just really, really good at everything he does offensively, which is fine. It doesn't necessarily have to be elite.
All right, let's just stick with 8.5 then.
That's fair. On defense, if you listen to my conversation with Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors, that's some insight there as to what we saw from Kyle last year. Overall, still a very good defender, but not to the point where, you know, he was earlier in his career. And I think you could start to see even at age 35, age kind of catching up to him a little bit, getting blown by on some occasions from the faster elite guards in the NBA there. But I think he still ranks pretty highly defensively. Where do you have him at?
I think because of that stuff, that added context, I did listen to that that episode with Sean Woodley. And I've heard similar stuff from other Raptors fans on Twitter and media guys saying that he kind of had a little bit of a drop off. We did a Breaking Down Kyle Lowry episode of 5 on the Floor that went up last night. And it was just about, you know, we addressed some of that stuff. And the
the advanced stats matched it too. There was a slight drop off with like some of the, you know, defensive box plus minus, the DRP. I mean, I can't remember some of these stats right now. There was a lot that I was peering through, but most of them showed. But I think also that has to do with the whole drop off that the entire team had. And, you know, that weird context that they had there that was kind of similar to what Miami had to go through with the COVID stuff, with the injuries.
Yep.
It feels like guys were kind of checked out. Lowry had his foot out the door midseason when he gave that press conference the day before the trade deadline or whatever it was. You know, I just think it's hard to really look at last season as sample of Lowry's decline. So I'm going to have him at 8.5. Maybe Ooh. If it wasn't for that, I think I would have had him at 9.
Wow. I do
think really highly of him on defense. I think he's just under the tier. You know, maybe not this past season, but previously, the past few years, I think he's just under the tier of all defense. Like, I do think he's that high level of a defender. And just so I gave him a slight dip because of that slight decline he had last season, just to, you know, account for it here. I do think it's an enormous upgrade over what they've had in the past.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And also in the next category, intangibles. Again, from everything we've talked about, everything that I talked about in that episode with Sean, we're getting a consummate leader. And maybe you could argue that we already had that with Jimmy. You know, you certainly have an up-and-coming strong voice in that locker room with Bam. But there's nothing like a guy with championship experience. And one of the points that I keep making is that this roster is lacking what Jay Crowder brought the previous year. Somebody who would get into Jimmy's face and challenge him and say, no, that's fine. You want to bark all you want to, but I'm going to get into it with you. And Kyle's not afraid to back down. You know, Udonis might be able to provide that too, but that's, you know, again, it's, I think to the point everybody's making is that it's harder to take Udonis as seriously because he does not get that playing time on the floor. And a guy like Kyle, still very much in his prime, maybe towards the tail end of it, but either way, a guy who can challenge Jimmy, will argue with him, he won't back down. That just speaks so highly of the kind of veteran presence that was missing, I think, on last year's roster. Not only that, but you also hear about his willingness to work with young guys, the fact that he was the one who built that culture in Toronto. That Toronto is, you know, you can question all you want to about whether
DeMar,
or not.
I feel like.
Yeah, him and DeMar. Fair point. But, like, I mean, how do you trace the lineage of culture in Miami? Was it Pat Riley in 95? Was it Alonzo being the first extension of that? And they kind of carried over by Dwayne in 2003 and on. But it's also guys like Keith Askins and, you know, James Posey and everybody else, every 3-and-D guy that Miami has had come in through that locker room at some point to help carry that culture alive. But Kyle is the guy who built it. Before that, what was the culture in Toronto? What was the identity that Toronto had? It was the team that everybody wanted to get the hell out of.
Yeah, losing all their best players.
Right.
That's the identity that they had. And the really cool, I got to say this, the really cool throwback uniforms that I'm a huge fan of. But that's it.
What, those purple tacky-ass ones with the dinosaur on them?
Stop it. All the 90s uniforms are tacky, and they're all incredible. The Hornets, the Sonics, the Nuggets.
At some point, I am probably the least fashionable dude on this planet, but, man, at some point, everybody was like, you know what? That's really gaudy.
Now, all the boxy stuff, everything looks like it's an impersonation of soccer with the little circle logos. Like, everything is so standardized. I feel like
maybe you're 90s, right. Maybe
it was like they were more bold.
Look, the Damon Stoudemire editions. No, thanks. I don't know. That's just not for me, but that's okay. You probably love the Vancouver Grizzlies one too, don't you?
Oh, I love the Grizzlies. I mean, who could forget
Brian Reeves, big country.
It's great that you came in there. Cause I was about to say, who can forget? And I literally forgot the name of the guy I was looking for.
That's the one everybody identifies with, the Vancouver era. Although,
no, I know who Big Country Brian Reeves is, but I'm thinking of the Sharif. Swing man. Oh. Yes, Sharif Abdul-Rahim. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
That's president of the G League, Sharif Abdul-Rahim. So he's still active. I see him around town every once in a while. He's there at NBA events. We saw him in Chicago. I know that. He was there during All-Star last year. That seems like an eternity ago. Anyway, moving on. Kyle, you have to give him a ranking in intangibles. I imagine it's pretty high.
Yeah, I'm just going to go. Let's just knock these two back-to-back right here, which is not something I do. 9 and 9. I think this is the stuff that he's the best at, even though I'm really high on his actual game on both ends of the floor. I think this stuff is like – it's hard to quantify. But I think you did a much better job articulating it than I could as far as what he brings off the floor to the team. And I think both, you know, the intangible stuff is like, you know, I'm mixing the two because I think Lowry's whole game, you know, is just kind of mixing all of it together, right? Like he does a little bit of everything that a team needs. And so I'm going to mix these two answers here because I think on the floor, off the floor, like he's the type of guy that we already, you already know, he has the reputation for picking up charges. He's always where he needs to be. He's always setting up other guys. He kind of sees things ahead of time, I feel like, when he's on the floor. He just really looks like an extremely high-level point guard. I really respect what he does, and that's why I'm going to have 9 and 9 there for intangibles and basketball IQ.
That's fair. Age and health, I think this one obviously a little bit lower there, but
yeah, a little bit lower for sure. I guess I'm going to have to go 4.5, 4.
Yeah, maybe 4. Yeah, I think 4 below average because, look, I think – the fact that you brought up, you know, earlier, they were tanking away the season. Like everybody's looking at, oh, he missed 20 something games. Yes. First of all, the season was shorter. It was in Tampa. It was very, very weird. And I think we know that they were probably putting him on the shelf on purpose. Like maybe there was an injury there. For the Heat. Yeah. Yeah. They probably would have played. He probably would have played through it if they were in the midst of a playoff run. That just wasn't the case. But he is older, and I think he will start to take a step down in an overall level of activity moving forward. So a 4 average, I mean, maybe even a 3.5, but you know, 4 is fine for now. That puts him pretty high still. His average rank here is still a 7.8, which makes him well above an average level player. Obviously not a superstar, but still a top 30-ish player in the NBA at this point in time.
Yeah, I think that's you know, he's right in that range for sure.
All right, moving on, Goran Dragic, the Dragon. Look, all of the off the court stuff and everything else, I still haven't even gotten into my proper eulogy for Goran Dragic and his tenure here in Miami. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Without a doubt, best point guard in Heat history. I think so. I think that's not to dismiss what Tim Hardaway did. I know everybody else really thinks of him as being this hard ass and this guy that was just, you know, early on in those teams that define what Miami Heat culture are. That's not to knock Timmy. I love Timmy. I've had him on the show. That's fine. Whatever. Goran is different. Like the fact that he's gone through so many different iterations and the fact that he was still able to be such a damn good player throughout all of these rosters when his role kept changing so consistently, I tip my hat to him 100%. On offense, still not the player that he once was. Still not as able to get to the rim with the kind of speed he had earlier in his career. I think that's probably the trend moving forward. But still a guy who could get a bucket for you. We saw those moments there. I mean, still played pretty well in the playoffs. I mean, he was one of the few Heat players that had his moments there. Very few and far between, obviously, but I'd still give him a 7 on offense. On defense, look, he tried very hard the year before in the Orlando bubble. There were legitimate moments there where he was a very solid defender, especially in the Milwaukee and Indiana series before the injury set in. I thought he was a pretty solid player there, bodying up guys like Malcolm Brogdon, you know, guards on the or Eric Bledsoe. He matched up well with him too. Like I thought there were moments there defensively where he held his own. Then when he tore the plantar fascia, obviously everything went out the door and he became even worse this year. So I have him as a 3 defensively, well below average. An intangible similar to what we were talking about with Kyle. A guy who was in that locker room, who overcame a language deficiency, not able to really connect with players to that same level, but slowly worked on it. He was a locker room inspiration, a guy that everybody looked up to. They really appreciated his tenacity, his just his everything, like everything he was able to do. And similarly, I think one of the reasons why he had such a strong connection to Jimmy is because he wouldn't back down. Like he gave shit as good as he got it. You know, he would talk his smack. He would get into it with Jimmy in that first year there. And he really showed something. Like I think a lot of people around the league don't like Goran Dragic, probably because they're somewhat xenophobic. He's white, he's European, and he is a little bit dirty in some regards. And that's fine. That's also why players on his team love him. So the 9, I think, is fair. In terms of basketball IQ, I think, you know, certainly he understood the game at a very high level. He was always a pretty solid playmaker and passer, maybe not as elite as Kyle. So I gave him just an 8 in terms of basketball IQ. And then unfortunately, when it comes to age and health, we've seen, you know, the body breaks down as he nears age 36. The plantar fascia took a lot of whatever was left of his speed and mobility, unfortunately. So I give him a 3 overall, which still puts him at a, you know, pretty decent above average ranking of 6 overall. But that means the differential between Kyle and Goran is almost 2 exact points, 1.8 to be exact, which means that Miami is actually 5.4 points better overall this year than they were last year. Look, that might not sound like much on paper, but I think it sounds pretty fair. It's all about building a better team, I think, but there are so moments, there are still factors here defensively, offensively, from certain players that we've lost or certain players that we added that make this team a little bit better of a group. Would you disagree with these overall rankings and the fact that this roster comes out better by a pretty fair margin?
No, not really. I think that actually sounds pretty good. I think, you know, it's a good scientific method you've got here, man.
I'm not sure how much we can apply this to everybody else, but I look at my, yeah, Miami made some pretty wide sweeping changes there. And shout out to Billy yet again for suggesting how to quantify something like this. And
I got to apologize to Billy for just completely making a mess.
Stop it. Stop it. You got it. You got it. You figured it out towards the end. Better late than never, man. That's okay with me. Hey, man, listen, again, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show. If you want to, we didn't get a chance yesterday, but remind my listeners where they can follow you and all your work.
No problem, man. It was great to be on. I guess if you guys want to follow me, I don't know why you would want to do that. You can find me on Twitter at Tropical Blanket. And I'm a part of Five Reasons and Five on the Floor with Ethan Skolnick and my guy, Leif Sylvander, not Greg, Leif. So check me out there if you want as well.
All right, you got it. Just a reminder, you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Be sure to please follow the show if you don't already and leave a review as always. Special thanks to all of our sponsors for supporting the show, but most of all, thanks to you. I'm David Ramil, signing off for now.